Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
From the blackest corners of your mind, they call, pulling you deep into shadow, twisting your senses, keeping you from sleep. It's time to face your darkest fears. This is Tales to Terrify.
Hello, children of the night. This is Crystal Hammond. I'm a narrator and audio editor slash casting person here at Tales to Terrify, which basically means I read the stories selected by our excellent fiction editors, go through our roster of talent, and then try to pick the right voice to bring to life each piece. So, since I worked in audio, today, I want to shout out some of my favorite performances in horror genre audiobooks that were both written and performed by women. But first, I want to give a giant shout out to all the women and femme-identifying folks who narrate for us here at Tales to Terrify. Y'all are a treasure. You pour your hearts and souls into this work. Believe me when I say it doesn't go unseen. Or, you know, unheard. To the audiobooks. First, I want to highlight Elise Arsinoe's performance in This Appearing House, written by Ali Melanenko. You've already heard a little bit about this book since it was highlighted earlier this month in episode 632, but it's also a book that's close to my heart. This is a middle-grade book about a cancer survivor who's facing down her fear of recurrence and struggling with her fear of rejection over her medical history. Something that I deeply identify with as a cancer survivor myself. Elise gives a genuine, heartfelt portrayal of these complicated emotions, even while she ramps up the tension of the narrative and gives a delightful, nail-biting performance. One of my favorite things about this book and about Elise's narration is just how vibrant all the other characters are. It really elevates the creep level of the bad guys and the house that our main character gets stuck in. Highly, highly recommended. Second, let's talk about Hold Back the Tide, narrated by L. Newlands and written by Melissa Salisbury. Y'all, this one was so much fun. It pulls on Scottish folklore, and yes, the narration is done in that accent. And it's about a girl who believes her father is a murderer when he's just trying to protect her from monsters. Elle's performance is freaking riveting, and not gonna lie, I kind of fell in love with her accent. And I'm not the only one who loved her in this. Hold Back the Tide won an Earphones Award for L. Newlands' performance back in 2021. This is a YA novel that gets really, really dark, and don't expect any happy endings. Third,
Let's talk about The Luminous Dead, an adult novel narrated by Anjuli Ojo and written by Caitlin Starling. This book, oh my god. It's science fiction horror, it takes place on another planet, and it's about a caver who's, like, physically wired into her caving suit and, unbeknownst to her at the beginning, is trying to uncover the mystery of what happened to a previous expedition in the same cave system. There are only two main characters in the book, and even though it only has two main characters, it's still super dark, claustrophobic, full of paranoia and double-crossing and backstabbing. And Anjuli Ojo killed it in her performance. Like, seriously. I had to listen to this one in short bursts because the intensity level is so high the entire time. These books, written by women, narrated by women, are totally worth your time if you're looking for a good horror listen during Women in Horror Month. And, since I've got you here, if you're a woman or femme-identifying narrator who's been thinking about narrating for Tales to Terrify, let this be your sign to give it a go. There's always room for more on our roster. We have one tale for you this evening, which comes to us from Abigail Kemsky. Abigail Kemsky is a fiction writer. Her stories can be found in Across the Margin, Vast Chasm Magazine, and A Thin Slice of Anxiety. She grew up in the Driftless area of Wisconsin and now lives near Minneapolis, Minnesota with her spouse, two children, and two cats. Follow her on Instagram and Twitter/X at Abigail Kemsky and online at abigailkemsky.com. Children of the Night, join me for Abigail Kemsky's Swirls and Eddies, a Tales to Terrify original.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Mm-hmm. Kenji crawls out of the sea, the briny water stinging his feet, cracked and bloody. As another wave crashes over him, he winces. Feet sink into sand. The granules burn as they embed themselves into his wounded soles. Relief comes once the icy lather numbs his feet. He can't remember why he isn't wearing shoes, why his feet are cut, how he had fallen in. The sea whispers, "Listen. Rest. Stay a while." A wave surges, and Kenji tumbles forward and somersaults under the water again. His face smacks the ground. When the wave recedes, Kenji is left gasping and coughing, shocked at how hard the sand felt against his cheek, how soft it feels beneath his fingers. He scrambles up the slope of the beach, spitting out the bitter liquid, then collapses out of range of the waves, soaked and breathless. There's no sign of his pack or any of his belongings. Still no sign of Taya. There hasn't been for days, weeks, months. For how much time, Kenji doesn't know. The walk along the beach is long, but Kenji knows he is close. He can taste the citrus on the salty wind, the promise of winter clinging to it. The autumn sun is not enough to keep his wet, bone-thin body from shivering. He wants to sleep, but he knows it's a dangerous kind of sleep coming. Kenji continues forward. She must be here. The day Kenji lost Taya, the waves caught his ear like a lure and pulled him along line, along the endless coast, searching for evidence to prove or deny what he had just seen because he couldn't believe it. He doesn't dare turn away from the foam-licked swells and go back home, ripping the lure from his ear and leaving drops of blood in his wake, because what was his home without her in it? Would he even know the way? Here, the sea sings to him. Here, he finds comfort in the shushing waves. Here, he's made his bed and slept since she's been gone. When he feels like he can no longer walk, his vision blurring at the far edges, Kenji spots a cliff up ahead. He hurries toward it, hoping it will better block the wind, the promise of respite, a warming jolt of adrenaline. As he gets closer, strange, massive vines come into view, thick as tree trunks, growing from the water and stretching across the beach. They creep along the side of a sea cliff. At the top, they wind across some structure. Weathered white stone peaks between thick, red-brown vines that creep upward, curve cylindrically. The shape of a beacon, a lighthouse. Kenji follows the vines along an old footpath up the cliffside. It is narrow and rocky with a crumbling railing attached. Thankful his raw feet are still numb, he hobbles across the loose rock and climbs the footpath to the lighthouse, trying not to think about whose blood is splattered on the rocks. Maybe a wounded animal, but when he looks back, he can't tell which drops of blood precede him and which are his own. At the top of the cliff, the lighthouse stands overgrown with vines. A thirsty forest borders its far side. Kenji circles it, searching for the door, pushing through the thicket. Thorns tug at his canvas jacket, scrape the backs of his sunburnt hands. Behind a young, yellowing aspen tree, he finds the door. Kenji opens it. Inside the lighthouse is an old boiler stove, a metal box, a stack of wood, and a chair with a folded blanket on top. Relief. He rushes over, forgetting about the blood on the rocks, needing to thaw his limbs. He strips off his wet clothing. Huddled beneath the blanket, Kenji lifts the latch on the box. The hinges groan open, presenting him with matches, a water bottle, a pouch of military rations, and a water-damaged, leather-bound journal. Kenji lights a fire in the stove. He nibbles on stale crackers from the ration pouch as he warms. Then he grabs the journal. The stains on its leather cover are salty white and shaped like the crashing crest of a wave. One-handed, Kenji flips it open to the middle. The journal reads, "Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies." "Don't you hear it? The sad beauty of her song?" Taya asked as Kenji entered the living room. "Taya, it's freezing in here." He went to her at the open window, snow swirling in and dusting the ledge, the blanket on her lap. She was watching the distant sea through a sliver between the tall buildings surrounding their apartment. Kenji shut the window, shook the snow off the blanket, and pulled her close. Her hands and feet were as cold as the snow, so she tucked them under his sweater. "That's what you're here for, Squishy. You can keep me warm." Kenji held her tighter, took in her sweet orange and honeysuckle perfume. "That's all I'm good for, huh?" "Shh. If we are quiet, we can hear it." Kenji paused, listened. "Hear what?" "The sea." "Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies." The cracker turns to sand in Kenji's mouth. Page after page of the journal are filled with the same line. From the interior pocket of his jacket, Kenji pulls out a small pink and white whelk shell, still intact after all the tossing about in the sea. It was the one Taya always carried with her, the one Kenji found and gave to her at the beach the day they met. He rubs his thumb over the whorls like Taya did countless times before. "Do not listen to the sea." Kenji tosses the journal across the room, not wanting to be near it. It lands open and wedged between the vines growing across the floor. In his rush to find warmth, Kenji hadn't noticed them before. However, the feeling in his limbs has returned and the shivering has stopped. Kenji remembers the blood on the rocks, the way the room was set when he entered. A low rumble drifts in through the broken window on the opposite side of the damp, mildewy room. The vines grow through it, branching off in all directions, covering floor and ceiling. Clutching the blanket around him, Kenji crosses to the window, examining the strange flowers blooming on the vines. They have small, circular petals with purple, spiraling stamens, nearly glowing in the dim light. Kenji sticks his head out the window. To the left and through the thicket is the sea cliff, with the endless blue beyond. He listens to the pounding of the waves, susurration echoing behind him. A rustling of pages. A whisper. "Kenji." He whips around, pulse quickening. "Hello?" Kenji's voice is hoarse and tinny, echoing around the circular space. No one is here, but someone had been. The blanket was folded just so, corners perfectly matched, wood neatly stacked. Whoever was here probably planned to be back. Why didn't he think about it before? Opposite the window is another door, and around the edge of the room, a staircase spirals up. Kenji creeps to the stairs and begins to climb, testing each step for its integrity as they sag under his weight, wincing again as the pain returns to his feet, remembering again the blood on the stones. He stumbles down the bottom few steps as he returns to the stove to grab the fire poker and holds it poised and ready as he continues up. The second level room is smaller than the first, maybe the bedroom, with an old radiator attached to the wall, crown molding, and antique keyhole doorknobs. The flaking paint on the wall was once sky blue, like Taya's eyes. An old cedar dresser stands to the side. The drawers are filled with unused candles and clothing, a long woolen coat, shirt, trousers, a white nightgown. "Hello?" he calls out again, swinging the poker around. It slices through the silence, the empty space. "The foundation?" Taya asked, biting her lip. Kenji stomped his foot on the original oak wood flooring. "Solid." Taya explored, swaying around the narrow, modest Victorian home, which was in dire need of repairs, taking it all in, unsure of where to start. The peeling wallpaper? Ripping up the matted shag carpet in the den? The water stains on the ceiling? She climbed the stairs to the second floor, moved as if the house were a rocking boat. "That view," she gasped from the bay windows of the tower, a smile warm and glowing like the sun rising over the sea. "We can see the ocean from here." "Sure can." It was so good to see her like this again. "Oh, Squishy, it's perfect." Taya leaped to Kenji and squeezed him, pushing her cheek against his chest. "Are we really doing this?" "Yes." He swayed back and forth with her, dancing to the song of the sea drifting through the window, the floor creaking beneath them. "Yes, we are." That night, they ate pizza on the kitchen floor. "You think the oak floors are under here, too?" Kenji patted the yellowing linoleum. "Yeah. See how the kitchen floor is higher than the rest?" He examined the different heights of the flooring. "Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally knew that." Taya rolled her eyes and grabbed another slice of pizza. "How about KT Restoration Inc.? What do you think?" "Eh, what about Kenji is super awesome at fixing things, Corp?" "Oh yeah, catchy." She flung a piece of pepperoni at Kenji. He tried to catch it in his mouth, but missed. She chuckled. Everything felt normal again that day. They stayed up late, planning for Taya to quit her job, estimating how long before the house would need to be restored as their showroom. Plotting their dreams, Kenji's only one was to make Taya happy again. And it seemed to be working. Taya was bright and animated like she used to be. Like the day he met her when her tiny senior dog accidentally peed on his sneaker. Kenji just laughed, declined Taya's offer to purchase a new pair to help him clean it up. It was an honest mistake and the dog obviously arthritic. He was so taken by the fluidity of her movements, her spontaneity and generosity. The soothing resonance of her voice. He said, "How about a walk instead?" So they walked to the beach, Kenji with one squishy shoe. Finding no one on the second level of the lighthouse, Kenji continues to climb, the rooms becoming smaller, staircase narrower, feet throbbing worse than before. The fifth floor and topmost room is the smallest. 360 degrees of windows allow the sun to warm the space like a greenhouse. The old lighthouse lantern lays broken on the floor. A rusty tin first aid box is attached to the wall nearby, containing only bandages. Kenji's feet ache in response. After a quick bandaging, he climbs back down the stairs. The dressings cushion his feet, but do nothing for the sand embedded in his wounds. On the second floor, he slips on clean clothes from the dresser, which are two sizes too big, but so are his regular clothes these days. Then he pockets some candles. He returns to the main level, avoiding the sight of the journal when he passes, then opens a door situated opposite the window, poker outstretched. It leads down to darkness. The wind gusts through the broken window and blows the door shut right out of his hand. Leaves and pollen swirl in the air. The deafening crash of the waves calls Kenji to the flower frame window. He drops the poker. Leaning out and looking to the left, Kenji sees foam fly through the air. Dark clouds gather at the horizon. The wind whips his black hair around. Is this how the sea called her, too? He pictures Taya at the cliff's edge, her long brown strands a whirlwind obscuring her face. Was she smiling? Was she scared? Her toes had curled over the edge, purple in the near winter wind. A piece of rock loosened and tumbled down the cliffside. Smack. Smack. Splash. It all feels so real, the same seasick nausea. Teo wavered at the ledge. The pain in Kenji's feet caused his legs to shake. Another rock gave way beneath her foot. The image of Teo tips over the ledge before him. Kenji sucks in his breath, bites his lip. He never saw the body after. Never heard it splash. No splatter of blood. She was just gone. And he still can't find her. He turns away from the window, a whimper trying to escape his lips. Across the room, the pages of the journal flutter. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. Kenji doesn't care if it lies. Here the sea has only spoken truths. Kenji stared from the top of the basement steps as something pale flitted around like an elusive deep-sea creature, nearly transparent and barely there. It skirted the piles of building supplies scattered around, wavering back and forth between the windows, which were propped open with paint sticks high up the basement wall. It wasn't until she sat on top of a tower of towering boxes, ear cupped to her hand, leaning, listening to the wild waves as a storm rolled in, that Kenji knew it was her. He spotted the floor scraper Teo went to retrieve an hour ago, clearly visible on the dusty workbench where it was supposed to be. Kenji sighed. The project hadn't been going as expected. Teo wasn't doing home repairs while Kenji was at work. He returned most days to supplies merely shuffled around, to Teo sitting at the open window, to sometimes an empty house, and later finding her lingering at the shore. Much of their savings had been used to purchase the supplies. Money had been tight for months, as they knew it would be. But it wasn't the money that bothered Kenji. He crossed to Teo, reached up and tugged on her hand. Come on, you're not doing this today. She pulled away, placing her hand in her pocket, fingers following the ridges of the shell. Teo, please. He tugged again on the hem of her baggy, paint-stained t-shirt, but she wouldn't look at him. They are out there, you know, she spoke to the window. How do you mean? All water goes back to the sea eventually. Kenji swallowed hard. He didn't want to think about the times he woke to Teo clutching her belly, with a blood stain stretching the length of her nightgown between her legs. Nor did he want to think about waiting outside the bathroom door while Teo sat, sobbing alone, waiting for the blood to be flushed away, for she was too prideful to let Kenji see her in that state. I promise it's going to get better. It's going to be okay. He never knew what to say. No, it won't. Taya's voice was flat, eyes drifting down to the disassembled crib, leaning against the old brick wall. She took in a sharp breath. You didn't get rid of it? You never said, I thought maybe we'd try again. She almost recoiled as Kenji touched her ankle. Tears welled in her eyes. I can't. I know it's hard. I can't imagine what it's been like for you. No, really, I can't. The doctor said there's too much scar tissue, and... But she wouldn't go on. She climbed down the boxes. Kenji wrapped his arms around her as she passed. She was all citrus and honeysuckle, cheeks salty with tears. Why didn't you tell me? I don't know. I don't want you to think it's all my fault. How can you say that? It's not your fault. You know that. The sea hummed its soothing sound through the open windows. Teo pulled away, hesitating as if caught in an eddy, wanting to move forward but spiraling back. Look, this will help you, don't you think? Kenji turned her face away from the window and gestured to the supplies scattered around the basement. It will keep your mind off things, help you move on. I just wish things were like they were before. They can be. They never will be. She turned and walked away, her hair a tangled mess in the back, and floated up the stairs as if breaching the surface of the ocean, leaving Kenji in its murky depths. He hardly recognizes his reflection in the rusty mirror of the candlelit, windowless basement of the lighthouse. Kenji's once sandy complexion now weathered like the coastal granite cliffside. His hair and beard are long and shaggy, cheek purple from smashing into the sand. For how long has he been searching? Would Taya even recognize him if she walked through that door? But no one is here except his own gaunt reflection, pale with pain. The taps are dry, so he can't clean his wounds. A shape flickers in and out through the reflection of the mirror. Kenji approaches it. At first, he rubs his eyes, blinking them into focus a few times. Is the darkness fooling him? But then the hair lifts up on the back of his neck. Kenji's body pulls back as his arm reaches forward to grasp the broken yellow laces of his sand-caked boots. The crashing waves bursted through the open bay windows like shattering glass. As he worked in an adjoining room, Kenji didn't notice that Taya had stopped painting in the hallway. It was the only job he could get her to do lately. She painted in smooth, undulating strokes. Once he finished removing the door off the hinges, he saw the dotted trail of pale blue paint across the hallway floor. Kenji set the door down, then stepped out to find Taya at the open window, the dripping paintbrush held at her side. Kenji rushed to the window, pulled it shut. Stop that. She drifted to the next. He shut that one too. Shut them all. Kenji held her by the shoulders, stooped down to catch her eyes, but she wouldn't look at him. Don't listen to that, please. But I like to. It helps. No, it doesn't. It's not good for you anymore. It takes you far away. What if that's what I want? Kenji's voice caught. What are you saying? What if that's where I want to go? Where you need to go is to get help. I'll take you. We can go right now. A faint roar drifted down through an open window upstairs. Taya handed him the paintbrush and followed the sound. Please, Taya, stop doing this. You have to try. Really try, or... Or what, Kenji? She stopped partway up the stairs and turned, finally looking at Kenji, but not into his eyes. The stare was blank, vacant like the house. In that moment, he felt like he was trying to swallow a box of nails, as he did every time he found her in that dark, empty, gutted house listening to the sea. But he didn't know this would be the last. The next morning, the house was empty, the spiral shell placed on the mantle. At the top of the steps to the main level, Kenji can hardly breathe. His damp hiking boots dangle from his hand. Outside, clouds have darkened the sky. The wind whooshes through the window, continuing to flip the pages of the journal. Kenji can't help but look this time. It opens to the page near the back, where the messy scrawl all runs together. Do not listen to the sea for all she speaks or lies. Kenji scans the room, senses acute, seeing things he hadn't before. Behind the vines on the wall near the stove is another door. He rips away the vines with a swipe of his hand and opens it. Inside are sets of clothing in various stages of washing, some soaking in buckets, some damp on a hanger, others dry, waiting to be worn. Woolen trousers, canvas jackets, white nightgowns. His breath bursts from him as he notices something more beyond the vines on the wall. Dark shapes that disturb a dusty rose damask wallpaper. He pulls a section of vines down. Pollen floats about the room like snow. Scrawled in coal, written every which way, do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. However, there's something familiar in the script. Something that makes Kenji yelp with what little air he can take in. The angled crossing of the T. Kenji pants, sweeping away the sweat from his forehead with a trembling hand as he walks toward the journal. The ocean roars. Water slaps on the rock. Kenji picks up the journal, flips to the first page where the script is more careful and clear. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. He wants to scream, eyes wide, throat constricting, but no sound escapes. The handwriting is his own. Kenji clutches the shell to his chest, rubbing his thumb over the whorls, muttering the words from the journal, which lays in front of the fire. At first, Kenji thinks the sound carrying through the window is just the ocean unsettled from the storm rolling in. He should know better after listening for so long. He should be able to discern the sound of the sea and a scream. He quiets. It's definitely a scream, and it's not his own. The journal slips from his hands as he rushes to the window. He finds nothing, hearing more screams. He hops out the window and runs to the cliffside. When he looks over the edge, he finds a long-haired woman clinging to a rock down in the water, waves thrashing over her. The hair is much the same, but he never heard Taya scream that day. He never even saw her in the sea. Kenji clambers down the footpath at the side of the cliff as quickly as he can, grabbing onto the vines when he slips, forgetting all about the bandages on his feet. At the bottom, he wades into the water, swims under the crashing waves, and another 40 or 50 feet before reaching the woman. She stops screaming when she sees him, hair covering her face. When he's close enough, she jumps into his arms. "Lie back," Kenji yells over the waves, treading water. "Lie back." He guides her head to his shoulder, wraps his arms around her, and kicks them both to the shore. They collapse out of breath for a few moments when they reach the beach. But soon, the woman shivers violently. Kenji guides her up the footpath to the lighthouse, thankful his feet are numb again because the bandages have fallen off. He can't stop staring at her as they dry off in front of the stove, cocooned by the soft glow of the flowers. She sits in the chair, under the blanket, and devours the food from the pouch of rations, ignoring Kenji. There's not an ounce of recognition in her blue eyes. That chocolate brown hair, fair freckled skin. "Taya, is it really you?" he says. "Who?" the woman replies. Kenji clears his throat. "Taya, my wife." "Wife?" He crawls closer, reaches for her hand. Her skin is still wet and glistening in the firelight. Pure and perfect in the chaos of this room, of the wild vines, half ripped from the walls. But he ignores all of it, all that happened before. Kenji places the shell in her hand. She stops eating, examines it. "I knew I'd find you, when you disappeared over that cliff." "That one?" she points out the window. "No." "Where?" Kenji grimaces, scratching at his cheek, wincing at the touch of his tender bruise. I don't remember." "Where are we now?" Kenji takes a shallow breath. "I don't know. I've been walking for ages, looking for you. I was in the sea, and I lost all my belongings, and then I was here. And the journal, the boots." "Kenji?" Her eyes meet his, so bright and blue. "Oh, Taya." He pulls her close, feeling like he can breathe again. "I've missed you so much." He takes in her scent, no longer of citrus and honeysuckle, but of beech and brine. Kenji retrieves a nightgown from the dresser upstairs and a change of clothing for himself. At the sight of his hobbling, Taya insists on cleaning his feet. She steps outside, then returns with a bucket of fresh water, saying she had spotted a water pump in the thicket earlier when they crossed from the footpath. He refills the canteen before she gets to work. Cleaning the sand out of his wounds makes Kenji dizzy with pain. When finished, he shoves his salt-crusted clothing in the bucket for a good soak, pausing a moment with his hands submerged. He shivers. The clothing in the closet. Taya takes his hands out of the water, squeezes them still, then gives him the shell. "You're just so tired." She looks deep into his eyes. "Let's get you to bed." Together, they curl up on the blanket in front of the stove. She drifts off instantly, but not Kenji. He can't believe it. She is here. She is here. She is really here. Good morning, Squishy, Teo will say when he wakes, sneaking up on him and pouncing with a hug. They'll linger and listen, watching the waves as long as they can, longing for their morning coffee, like they used to have every morning in the apartment before Kenji walked her to the half-gutted Victorian house on his way to work. But this time, Kenji will walk her home. In the middle of the night, Kenji wakes with a start, alone, the door ajar. He looks out the window to see the sky is clear, the storm has passed, the air turned frigid. A full moon rises over the sea. Taya's silhouette lingers at the cliff's edge. No, stop, Kenji shouts. He grabs the coat from the chair and rushes past the journal, past the words scrawled on the walls to the cliffside. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. He races, forgetting all about his bare, injured feet, but when he rounds the lighthouse, Taya is gone. There's a flutter of white in his periphery. She runs to the footpath. Wait! Kenji sprints after her. He slips on the loose rocks as he descends the path, feeling the bandages rip off, the scabs peel away, leaving behind drops of blood on the stones. At the beach, he kicks up a spray of water as he approaches Taya, who stands in it ankle deep, her nightgown shimmering in the moonlight. Kenji tries to cover her with a jacket, but she steps further from the shore. She turns. Come to me. Taya reaches a hand to Kenji. A wave grows behind her as the ocean calls in echo. Come to me. Kenji steps forward, trembling. Out there? It's so cold. The wave continues to grow. The water around Kenji's ankles recedes. Feet sink into sand. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. Yes, it'll be okay. I promise it'll make things better, she smiles. When was the last time she smiled like that? Her whole face lighting up in the glow of the moon. The dimple on her left cheek. Is this how she felt when she listened to the waves? Is this how she wanted to be in the sea? Water towers over them, threatening to block the moonlight. Kenji takes her hand. That's it. Yes, this will help you, Taya says. The sound of the sea is all-consuming, drowning. Yes, come to me. Come, my love, she continues. Kenji tenses. Now we can be together. The crest of the wave curls above them. Taya's eyes become luminous purple, just like the flowers. My love? It was never my love. How easy it was to believe. How easy it is to give in. How easy it would be to follow. Kenji staggers. The woman's eyes widen. Her hair fans out as if floating in the water. Feet hover above the shore. Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. Lies. Which lie? The lie Kenji told to himself that he could make Taya better, or that she could be found? His wounded feet sting in the icy brine. He winces. He's been here before. The boots, the clothes, the supplies, the journal. The blood on the rocks is his. Always his. No, Kenji says. Teeth gnash, sharp, angular. No? How many times has he been here? How many times has he gone back to the sea? Do not listen to the sea, for all she speaks are lies. Tears blur his vision as he tries to stop the images flooding his mind, but closing his eyes isn't enough. He sees her go over the edge, her head smack the rock, her lifeless body floating face down in the reddening water. Did the sea speak to Taya in this way? Did it lie? Did she care? Kenji's fingers twitch and shudder. Grip loosens. The wave moans and crashes, leaving Kenji soaked and dripping on the sand, screaming a guttural, throat-tearing cry. He tumbles as the waves crash over him, then crawls across the sand and out of the sea, feet stinging, cracked and bloody. He can't remember why he isn't wearing shoes, why his feet are cut, how he had fallen in. And the sea whispers, "Listen, rest, stay a while."
That was Abigail Kempsty's Swirls and Eddies, as read by Jim Matusik. Jim Matusik is a voiceover professional based in Indiana and is thrilled to be narrating for Tales to Terrify. He has worked on animation projects, video games, explainer videos, and everything in between. You can contact Jim through his website at jimmatusik.com or shoot him an email at info@jimmatusik.com. Thank you, Jim.
Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of tales to tell. For now. Tales to Terrify is made possible by the tremendous generosity of our supporters on Patreon and PayPal. Incredible fans like Lessel Baxter, Paul Belcher, Amanda Carrillo, Amanda Gottfried, and Orion D. Higra, whose generous support helps keep the lights on and flickering ominously. Not a supporter already? Head over to patreon.com/talestoterrify, where you'll find all kinds of perks, like ad-free episodes, bonus content, and one-of-a-kind collectibles and merch packs. Every dollar goes back into this show to make it as horrific as possible, and we appreciate it so much. Want another way to support the show that doesn't cost a cent? Head over to Podchaser, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating or review. You'll not only put an unnaturally wide smile on our faces, but help new listeners discover our terrifying tales, too. Why not share your love of the show out in the world with some Tales to Terrify merch? TalesToTerrify.com/merch will take you to our TeePublic store, where we've got a great collection of creepy custom and curated designs, so you can show those around you just how twisted you truly are. Tales to Terrify is produced by Seth Williams, Meredith Morgenstern, Andrew Gibson, Crystal Hammond, Spencer Disparti, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with original theme by Nebulous Entertainment. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Join us again next week as we satisfy unearthly hungers with more Tales to Terrify.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.